Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Father, what is out there beyond the skies?
The watchful eye rules the skies, you know this.
But what if we had the means to reach the skies? What if there are others besides the Ba'ul?
If the great balance had meant for us to fly, we would have been given wings.
But does the watchful eye have wings? We sacrifice our own kind to the Ba'ul instead of asking if we could be like them.
The balance must not be upset. Those who offer their lives do so that the Ba'ul can be sustained, so that the rest of us may live in peace and comfort. The time will come for each of us. That is the balance. That is how it has always been. And you will question it no more.
All right.
There it goes.
There we go.
Rolling.
We've pushed the buttons that tell us that we've started recording.
Record.
There's a clock over here.
We will record. We will record now.
We will record
weird.
In this decade and do the other things. You have to do the whole thing. Your voice is better, but you got to get the extra. We Boop. Will record in this decade and do the other things.
We will record.
Okay, all right, I got it.
A decade to made thing.
You sound like you're like in a bad Zoom connection. What Kennedy said in that speech, sorry for the digression because we are starting the podcast, but what Kennedy said in that speech was, we will go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. We will go to the moon in this decade.
At the end of the decade.
And do the other things.
Took a long
Not
time.
Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Right. You told her.
You told her.
All right. Okay. You told her. You told her.
For the Cause, right?
Yeah.
Quark in For the Cause.
You told her.
You observed that his voice sounded similar forward and backwards.
You told her. You told her.
So, welcome. I know it's a little delayed, this welcome, but welcome.
A delayed welcome.
Welcome
Hello.
To the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Hey!
You find yourselves...
hey!
You fair audience listener, you find yourselves in whatever position you may find yourselves, at home...
And you may ask yourself...
At work...
Oh, no.
That's not my beautiful
jogging
wife.
Jogging along in the park...
Jogging.
In a submarine beneath the sea...
Ill-advised.
Whatever situation you may find yourself.
Submarine beneath the sea.
You will find yourself listening to episode 234 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
That Did you do that? Don't do that. That's rude.
that's what we've done. We've done this at the conclusion of this podcast, presuming we make it to the end. And if you're hearing this,
I don't think so.
I'm guessing we did.
Liar.
Then we will have concluded 234 episodes of the It's Got Star Trek
podcast.
Yeah,
that's a lot of episodes. Liar.
And that does not count bonus episodes.
That's nearly like one of them sesquicentennials.
Very nearly. And it,
I did not
and it
understand.
Does, and it doesn't count all the Patreon content that we've been developing and putting up on our Patreon. Hey, Dan, do you happen to know where folks can find our Patreon? If they are so inclined, if they're interested in a little extra bonus fun times.
On the internet.
I love you, Daddy.
Yeah, but Dan, do you know the website? We had a little problem with this last week. You might not recall it.
Yes!
Do you know?
I love you, Daddy.
This week, do you know the website to direct people to our Patreon? These are people who either want to see free samples, get little tastes of what's available, or pay the $3 a month to, get the whole shebang. Where would they go?
Patreon.episode/It's Got Star Trek.
Dan,
am I right?
Dan's fooling around a little bit here.
Am I right?
Are you fooling over there?
Where you would go is no. Where you would go is Patreon.
I'm gonna tell you where to go.
Patreon.com/ It's Got Star Trek.
Oh,
easy peasy.
I know.
Yeah, it is.
/ easy peasy.
You go there, and there's again free previews. There's some free content. You can check it out if you're so inclined. There's some fun, silly stuff up there. Okay.
That's what I said.
Yes. What are we talking about?
What are we
about?
Doing? This short treks.
Yes. We're doing this week.
Don't Discovery need no short trek.
This week, we are doing Discovery-related short treks. Now, some of you out there are going to say, hey, you said you're doing Runaway. You said you're doing Calypso.
What?
You said you're doing The Brightest Star.
We did say that.
You even said you're doing The Girl Who Made the Stars, but... What you didn't say you're doing is the Escape Artist. And there's a reason we're not doing the Escape Artist.
We already did it.
Yes. First of all, we already did it. I think it was in, what was it, episode 89? I think, yeah, 89.
We did the Edward one.
89. Yeah, we did the Trouble with Edward one as well. But we did the Escape Artist in episode 89. So we've already discussed it. Point number one.
Yep.
Point number two is, yeah, it's mud from Discovery, but the story is largely disconnected from Discovery. So don't worry about that. Just worry about the ones... that we assigned you to watch. All right?
Yeah.
Good?
What are you worried about?
Exactly. Okay.
The being said.
Keep your mouth shut.
So that is what we will be discussing this week. I don't have any news-em-ups or anything. Does anybody else have any news-em-ups? Other than to mention that starting next week, we will be...
My name is Dan Glaubitz.
Jesse's doing one of those pretending to be Dan things. next week, we will be starting...
My name is Dan!
Our coverage of the fifth and final season of Star Trek Discovery, which is partly why we're going over these four Discovery-related short treks this week. But that's the only thing I have. Jesse, Dan, either of you have any news 'em ups? You got any gigs that you want to advertise? No.
Didn't we have a little chat last week? Isn't that what we did? Instead?
Oh, did you want to do some chat 'em ups?
No, I mean not really.
Was there something you wanted to fill us back for those who didn't listen to last week's episode where we discussed Star Trek Voyager's Muse, we piloted the chat 'em ups, which is where we just
pilot?
It's you know what? What that is, that and the iBorg thing are what do you call it? Is it Twitch? It's not a Twitch.
A tick.
Yes. I don't, and I forgive me if that's not the appropriate term, but it's interesting. Dan has it. If you say pilot, he's going to quote Vincent from Pulp Fiction.
I think
he's going to say, what's a pilot?
I think that's more of a tick than me talking about iBorg, but iBorg is more just a reflex. Or it's not even a reflex. iBorg is iBorg.
Because sometimes you do it on purpose.
Yeah.
Sometimes you lay it in, you lay in fucking wait.
Right. iBorg is more like in sort of.
I can often see it coming now.
iBorg is more like an intricate sort of weaving of plots and concepts together to create a desired end.
It always leads back to the
pilot. Yeah, that's more like a tick. Like, what's a pilot?
Desired.
It's just
end.
Fun to say it.
Desired end is a funny.
It's like saying D's nuts.
You have a desired end.
It's a funny phrase.
It's like saying D's nuts or like I watched you watch it.
Yeah, I watched you watch it.
Then when people say excellent, I start to go like egg salad,
right?
Egg salad,
as opposed to like excellent from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, like excellent.
I don't go like excellent. I don't do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, chat 'em ups.
That concludes the chat 'em ups
this week and the news 'em ups.
It's time for Trek 'em ups.
We got a lot to discuss this week, so we get right into it.
Not that much.
And then probably what will happen is right as we start discussing Runaway, Dan's going to chime in with like, actually, Runaway. I have this anecdote that I wanted to tell you.
Yeah.
But
probably.
The thing is there's no way for us to get to that anecdote if we don't start talking about the short trek episodes. But before we talk about the specific episodes, I thought, why do we not talk a little bit about the concept of short treks in general?
Say what?
Was it a answer is not that complicated.
I did not understand.
Okay. Just the short tricks.
All right. So look,
as a media.
Yes. So in 2018 and 2019, they only did this 2 seasons, 2 years.
We've only
this.
Talked about a couple of
Paramount Plus or CBS All Access, whatever the fuck it was called at the time, to hype people up for Star Trek Discovery's second season. Ahead of that season, they put out, I think it was it 4 or 5 of these short treks. And then they did the same thing the following year,
yes.
Except they folded in some Strange New World stuff.
And Picard.
There was one.
Before there was even Children a Strange New World show.
Yeah. So, cool.
It's totally cool
that they developed these short form videos.
Oh yeah, there was one that sort of like that went up that
webisodes
matched up with like an early Picard episode.
Yeah, that was the Children of Mars. I think they called it.
Where like the, of maybe Mars, the second or the first episode.
Children of Mars,
but
gonna go far. Is that Children of Mars?
Is that an actual song? Or are you?
It's, what do you mean? It's an actual song? I just sang it.
That Picard episode with the
you know what I mean?
And they were all saying hell yeah.
I mean, did this come extemporaneously off of your dome? Or
off my your dome?
Did you peel this shit off your dome and just slap it
are
out
of
there?
Are you peeling dome over there?
All right. I'm not going to get an answer to that.
Mars, gonna dome. Get far. Beautiful Mars.
So, okay.
Beautiful Mars.
We're not talking about Mars.
Beautiful Mars.
All right.
Beautiful Mars.
Short
gonna
tracks.
Go far. Beautiful Mars.
Is that like they might be giants or something?
Everybody was presenting four hands on their real head. And the people ran, and the people come inside. And the people came. They're
going
to blow my playground. Or what is it? They're going to burn the foreheads down.
Everybody looks a rock to wind a piece of string around. Okay. All right. We're getting there.
We're losing control rapidly.
No. Everything's fine. We're talking about short treks. We're talking about how they were clearly an advertising mechanism a la the webisodes of yore.
Webisodes.
Back in the day, Battlestar Galactica did some webisodes that were actually pretty good. A lot of shows had webisodes that
webisodes.
Were some bullshit.
Webisodes.
They were just some bullshit.
Webisodes.
But these, Webble, I think that these years. Short treks introduced the idea of a great format where it's shorter, it's not constrained to a specific time.
Yeah.
We've often talked about stories that they've done on Star Trek where it feels like they've stretched it out to fill the hour.
It's like there's certain types of short stories you read that are just a few little pages.
Yeah.
It's just this little blip, you know?
Yeah.
And then they're cool to read like that.
Like baby shoes for sale, never worn.
I think one of the short treks had Alita Battle Angel in it.
Word, yes, yeah. That was the Trouble with Edward.
Rosa Salazar. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's one of my favorites. A lot
and
of people hate
H-
the Trouble with Edward. That was the same
H-
one with
John
Benjamin.
Oh, right, that was the same one, right. Yeah, it's yeah. H. John Benjamin.
And granted, we're not talking about that.
We already talked about it.
But that's a good one.
But just to give you, paint a
but
picture
a good
for
one.
You.
We already did that one.
Yeah, we did already discuss that one. Dan might not have been here
Look
for
back.
Yeah, so I'm a fan of this concept, and I'm a little sad that they haven't continued it. I do think it's sort of been years. They're like an evolution of the webisode because the webisode.
One time, a teacher criticized my netiquette because I didn't sign it at the end of my email. I didn't put like from Dan at the end. So she was like,
Did she complain that you didn't have an inspirational quote?
No.
Or a quote from a sci-fi.
No. Yeah, I didn't put enough effort into the signature. No, I just
was she mad that you didn't have a script to rotate the quotes from an LZH file that was just like filled with quotes,
yeah,
you know? And then so every email you sent would be a different one.
Boy, she was steamed about that one.
Man,
did you call her a bee?
Netiquette.
A bee.
A bee.
How long is it gonna take? TikTok.
The Borg. A bee.
There we go.
Bee. The Borg.
A duck.
A duck. Indeed. Okay, so webisodes were sort of silly and trashy. Not always, but
trashy.
I think they were more nakedly commercial.
Ooh, there was nudity.
How titillating!
Was it titillating?
Look, I know people.
Was the nudity titillating?
Nudilies.
Was the nude titular character titillating?
Ocelot.
You're not helping, Jesse. You're encouraging.
Totally.
What was I saying? Something about
titillating titular Tory talk to the tall. Temerian. Temerian. Ooh, is that Temerian. Good?
Way to bring there it back go, to way to bring it back to Star Trek.
A titular titillating Tory talked to a tall Temerian. A titillating titular Tory talked to a tall Temerian.
Do Temerians have Tories?
Tory. Oh man,
is it like the you know, the British like the Conservative Party?
It's the Tory Lorry.
Yeah. Okay.
More mush makes me mad. More mush makes me mad. There's some vocal exercises.
So short treks are good.
They are good. I like
they
them.
But
the webisodes were trashy.
Okay. Look, I don't want to paint with too broad a brush.
Ill-advised.
Like I said, Battlestar Galactica had some pretty good webisodes, but a lot of other shows, it was just more nakedly commercial.
Nudity.
Where these, I think every one of these, whether you're a fan of the particular short trek or not, because obviously people's opinions vary, I think they've all been put together with such care. Mm-hmm. And I've also been very impressed that like all four of these that we watched for this evening. They took their time, even though they're short, they have a limited time to tell their story, but they each took their time to like kind of ease into the story, ease into the characters. And that's a thing that, you know, a critique of a lot of the modern Star Trek is that it's a little, you know, it's too much. And these like let you have just like a little extra breathing room.
There was something about the production of The Brightest Star that was kind of like, I don't know, it was really nice. Like it was,
yeah, and that was filmed at the same time that they were filming an episode that had the same sets in season two. I mean, one of the cool things here is
that's a nice set.
It's classic Star Trek style, as in we don't have a lot of money to throw around, so let's do the best we can with what we've got.
Funky lagoons.
But they're so talented that I mean they got brilliant production design for this, and it's a great way to like get more out of that production design.
Word.
Anyway,
that's why I'm a big fan. I hope they do more of the short treks.
They probably won't now that Discovery's ending.
Well, because they're not all about Discovery, right? That's the thing. It's like they started as a Discovery thing, but then they're also Strange New Worlds.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. They did do Strange New Worlds.
And Ephraim and Dot, which is another one that we discussed. That spans the whole franchise, basically.
The whole franchise.
But they've got that Section 31 TV movie coming out. So that's a new format they're playing with is like the, for lack of a better term, the TV movie, the streaming movie.
Jeez, oh, flip.
Right? So they're going in that direction. I like, let's do more of that. Let's do more of the short treks. Let's do more Star Trek.
I like them short treks. I like them short treks.
What do you like about the short treks, Dan? Why don't you tell us, what do you like about short treks?
I like
their lengths.
Not too long.
I like the story. I like them short treks.
All right.
That's the cheese we put on them crackers.
I think that's the clue that we should
that's
get.
That's the cheese. What is that cheese we put on them crackers?
What are you talking about? Which cheese?
That kind that comes in like a spray can.
Oh.
It's primarily sugar.
That's a delicacy in Europe, you know. I can't stand that stuff.
Squeeze cheese?
Yeah, it's like fancy. It costs like $100.
You're making shit up.
You got like people hoard that stuff.
You're making
the stuff that's like comes out of like a whipped cream can, but it's cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my lord.
Okay, how about we get started talking about Runaway, which was the very first.
If you want to survive,
of the short treks.
Runaway.
And
run away and say goodbye.
It was broadcast for the first time on October 4th, 2018.
Oh, man.
And the in-universe date is 2257. So as we were just talking about, the production values are fantastic. Mm-hmm. The opening shot is a wonderful hero shot of the ship, mm-hmm. right? I like this slow hero. It looks all real and, you know, it looks real physical.
Poe snuck in through the cargo bay.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
She snuck in.
Yeah.
She had some kind of porcupine quills.
Yeah. All right.
And she was invisible. She could make herself invisible, but her blood was not invisible, which didn't make sense to me. She should have invisible blood.
Well, it makes
blood,
sense too. To me. It's like a chameleon. The skin can make somebody invisible, but the blood, when it comes out of the skin.
Well, if the skin's invisible, then why didn't you see the blood floating around inside of her arm?
Because it's not invisible in that way. It's like bending the light around. It's like a cloaking device.
I don't know about that.
I do know about that.
Oh.
What do you think of that?
Oh.
What do you think of that? I do know about that.
Don't you ever watch those? Isn't there like the Wonder Woman cartoon where she's like flying around an invisible ship and you can see her all like.
Yeah, you could just see her.
See her floating around.
You know, she's sitting there. As a counterpoint, right? It's really hard to go against that one, Dan.
Yep.
I got to say, you're right. The Wonder Woman cartoon.
Invisible ship. Yep. Why is there an invisible ship?
Yeah, well, she has. Why does she have a lasso?
A lasso.
That makes one tell the truth.
A lasso.
Yeah. Wonder Woman was famous for having a.
She does not mess around.
A truth telling lasso. Mm. What? Do you have a problem with how I'm pronouncing lasso?
Pronouncing.
It's first you said lasso. Now you're saying lasso. Now you're saying that Clouseau.
No, I'm not saying anything Clouseau.
You're saying Clouseau.
You mean like Inspector Clouseau in the Pink Panther movies?
Ambiguous.
A shot in the dark?
You're saying it like Clouseau.
Does your dog bat?
Meh.
That is not my dog. It's funny.
He all hits a piano with this like ball and chain thing, and someone's like, "That was like a super expensive piano," and he just goes like, "Not anymore." But except he said it in a
not anymore.
Yeah, it was like that basically. And for some reason, that always made my dad like laugh hysterically every time he. Mother. Obviously, it's funnier when you see it than me quoting, actually misquoting it.
I don't know. It's pretty funny.
Not anymore.
I'm getting a laugh.
See, there you go. You made Jesse smile. You know how hard that is.
Mm. I know, right?
Runaway. So, yes, Dan, in case I interrupted you, last we were talking about this episode, Dan was just reading off a list of attributes of Poe. So you said she has spiky porcupine quills.
Yeah.
You said she snuck in.
She's sort of like an insect or something.
She snuck in. She's invisible, but
like
her blood's not.
Like a butterfly.
Yeah. Do you have other observations? Other observations about Poe?
She has, her name is Hani Ika Halika Poe. Hani Ika Halika Poe.
Kind of like replicator food fight business.
Hani Ika Halika Poe.
It sounds vaguely.
Mihani Ika Halika Poe.
It sounds vaguely.
Oh, it's Mihani.
Hawaiian.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Mihani Ika Halika Poe.
Mihani Ika Halika Poe.
That was that Hawaiian burger joint.
Yeah, that's another Pulp Fiction joke.
I know that.
A lot of references to Pulp Fiction.
Big Kahuna Burger.
She was missing. She was classified as strategically critical. You should not approach her. You should not don't harm her. She must remain alive and secure.
Okay.
You have to contact the Zahian Council immediately. If she's located
right away.
Critical. Repeat, and then at all costs, she must. Remain alive.
Don't give
her. They repeated that because
it's
all
gross. Don't give her any Sprite to wash this down.
Check out the big brain on Brent. We should do a Pulp Fiction podcast.
I know, right?
It's got Pulp Fiction.
Maybe okay. We could just make this one a Pulp Fiction.
We could. We could just shift gears. Right.
So those are some more facts about Mihani Ika Halika Poe.
Those are some good facts. We did skip over the fact that we...
Here's another fact.
We see Tilly dealing with
an
overbearing, unpleasable mother figure.
I know, right?
Which is helpful background. Now, we've seen some of these interactions before, but one of the things you get to do with these short treks is they're able to flesh out characterizations without taking up time in the main story where they're trying to go boom, boom, boom and keep things moving.
Tilly's mother's just awful.
Yeah, she's trying to like
horrible.
She's trying to convince Tilly to like hold on to her fears, and she's telling her how much pain she's supposed to be feeling for something that happened as a kid,
and something that might happen if she tries.
Right, if she tries,
exactly. Her mother's whole message is don't try.
Don't have confidence.
It's like this whole you'll Starfleet be sad.
Thing, you'll know?
Be
trying.
Yeah, don't try because you'll be sad.
It's fucked up.
That's fucked
it's
up.
It's pretty messed up.
I mean,
it's also sadly, it's very relatable to a lot of people.
I don't know if it's. It's and for a minute there, it felt worse than saying like, "Don't try because you'll fail. Don't try because you'll be sad as a result." Like,
ultimately, both, the joke is on Tilly's
mom. It's hard to say which one's worse, but they were both kind of
Tilly disappears into the future.
Yeah,
they're both kind of shitty to say to someone.
No, it is. It really is. it's awful. And what I like is they portrayed this in a very realistic way, which was her mother was not coming off as some sort of shrill, ridiculous harpy, some sort of stereotypical whatever. Instead, she was a sadly all too realistic, terrible parental figure who, for whatever reason, we don't understand her particular motivations, is just doing everything she can to grind Tilly into the ground. And doesn't she make her, doesn't she reference Tilly's stepsister in some positive sense? So it's even worse. It's like, you're not only are you a disappointment, but I implicitly love your stepsister more than you, because she goes, accomplishes more.
She said, you know who I was just speaking about this with? And she says, your stepsister. She is always so smart about these things. And then she goes on to immediately say, honey, look at your desktop. Like, she moves directly to criticizing her
she's
desktop.
She's got to go get like a quadruple espresso or something.
You're just so clearly over-caffeinated.
Quadruple espresso with milk alternative?
Milk alternative.
No, it's my only friend.
So this is a very relatable story, and it gives us a lot of helpful background for Tilly, in that we know she has this real and it continues to develop.
We know it.
You
know
it.
We know it.
You know it.
We know she has this attachment to.
We know it.
To the Discovery and to her crewmates, and. Part of that is clearly motivated by the need to latch on to a new family, because her
mom sucks.
Given family is terrible.
Yeah.
Certainly her mother. We don't hear about other stuff.
Yeah, right.
And you can, and you
dad's
know,
dad's probably fine.
Maybe, but you can also imagine the dad being kind of like, you know, like the Hansel and Gretel dad,
maybe
where he's kind of, he doesn't, you know, he loves his children, but he's also like, he's like, I'm just going to go along with whatever my evil murderous wife tells
me
to
old
do.
Old school shit. Yeah,
it is a little old school.
So dad just doesn't get involved.
I'm just saying, we don't know the deal. There's still room to flesh some of that out, although I'm probably not at this stage. But I don't know if the dad was still in the picture, because Tilly, you know, I don't know. It's just clearly her issues are mainly with her mom. But it's a great setup. It's great extra information. Totally. And it positions us for this nice, cute little, very, very thin little story. But it's like finding somebody, and in the act of giving them some good advice, you take that advice yourself, you realize it for yourself, and then you feel a little bit better, and you make better decisions down the line.
You're a teen kid.
It is. But there are things that pop up in this episode, like, for example, Jesse, I think you referenced it already, the food fight.
Yeah.
Snacks, snacks, snacks.
Now, did anybody get, I didn't get all of them, but I tried to write down as many things that the food dispenser was talking about.
I got 16.
It's a bunch of regular.
I got 16 plus one that I couldn't decipher.
Earth
all right,
food.
Let's go through and see what we've got the same. All right, Dan.
Snacks, snacks, snacks.
All right, I got that. Three snacks, snacks. Hold on, let me check these off, Dan. Snacks. Okay, I've checked that
snacks,
off.
Snacks,
all
snacks,
three
snacks.
Snacks.
That wasn't part of the snacks I was talking about. I got pickles.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear pickles. Did they say pickles?
Yep.
And you're saying that the machine said it. The voice said it.
Yeah, the voice
said
it.
Cool.
They got eclairs.
Ooh, I didn't catch eclairs.
Spaghetti with meat sauce.
Yeah.
I didn't. You got some good ears, man. I didn't hear none of that.
Gelato.
I didn't hear that.
I got gelato.
Wow.
Snacks, snacks, snacks.
I got, well, that one I got.
Lasagna.
I got lasagna.
Lemon ice cream.
Okay, it was, for me, it was inaudible ice cream.
Doff nuts.
What's it, what?
Doff nuts.
Donuts. Did you say donuts?
Sugar is awesome.
Yep.
But you're saying it like, hold on. Let's pause for a second.
What the hell?
What were you trying to pull there? Was that just didn't think we'd mention it?
I mean, you knew what I was saying.
I mean, I did eventually know what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Doff nuts.
I mean, I say other things. Well, Jesse says helicopter. Some people say milk. Milk.
Milk. Milk.
I say everything
my
pretty normally.
Says moke.
Moke.
All right, let's moke. Continue the list.
Donuts. Cheeseburger. I can has cheeseburger.
Yes, a cheeseburger.
Caesar salad.
Caesar salad. Yes, yes, French, yes.
One. French fry.
French fries. Yes. From
I just
Belgium,
got.
No,
I just got. I just got French fry.
Yeah.
Singular.
Oh, I thought it was French fries.
You might be right. I'm not saying I'm right.
Now, there was one that sounded like you was saying like lycopene.
It was. It was lycopene.
So, no,
what's
totally
lycopene?
Said lycopene.
Is that just protein? Is that some sort of
it's
amino acid?
It's the chemical in a tomato that...
Isn't that like an amino acid or
lycopene.
Something? Lycopene.
Yeah. It sounds like it's something.
Did
like
you get
that.
Chicken soup?
It gives vegetables and fruits their red color.
Chicken soup?
Yes.
Yes, I did get chicken noodle soup. I also got chicken pot pie.
Chicken pot pie, chicken soup.
This is making me very hungry.
Snacks. I got
I should have brought more snacks. Snacks.
Cheesecake as well.
Yeah.
I got cheesecake. And there was cheesecake. One after pickles, between a pickles and eclairs that I couldn't make pickles out what it was saying.
Eclairs.
Sugar is awesome.
Eclair.
I enjoyed that little scene there with the food dispenser going crazy.
I didn't understand why it went crazy.
Well, it's a suspension of disbelief that we're like. I think we're meant to understand that Poe manipulated it in some way because been damaged. But why?
Why? Yeah, why? Right,
why was Poe running around and bumping into?
Because she's a little scamp.
No, well, I think we're supposed to understand that she's injured and so she's acting like an quote unquote injured animal.
Injured. He says injured.
Yeah. Injured?
Injured. I'm not trying to criticize the way you're saying it. That's just how, it's like Jesse says helicopter.
But you were criticizing Jesse for saying helicopter.
I wasn't criticizing. I wasn't being critical. I was just saying there's some words we know someone who says tagger instead of tiger.
Oh, yes.
So it's just interesting that you don't say injured, you say injured.
You mean like tiger with a southern accent?
No, tagger.
Tagger?
Yeah.
What's a tagger?
It's like when you play tag and you tag someone. No, it's like a tiger. You just call it a tagger.
Who calls it a tagger without it being in a southern accent, though?
Someone we went to high school with.
Okay. We're going to take a break. Dan and I are going to discuss this. When we come back from the break, we'll continue our discussion.
I hope so.
Of the Star Trek Short Tracks. Be right back.
Have a glorious day.
We're back. Okay.
Holy shit.
Oh, okay. Hey there. Hello.
You're just so clearly over-caffeinated.
All right. Let's wrap up our runaway discussion.
It was weird. The food went crazy. Yes. And then there was Poe.
Poe. Who is a cool character who comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I forget which episode she comes back, but she helps out with some warp drive stuff.
And
later on.
Poses was saying something about how she was born the same time. Okay, they were born the same time as their planet.
Yes.
Now, first of all, I assume she means she wasn't born the same time as her planet, but her people were. And even beyond that, it's probably I would have to have been some sort of like pre-evolved sort of version of them, because how in the world is this humanoid figure going to develop at the same time the planet was born?
Sounds like legend.
It's probably legend.
It's legend.
It's legend.
It reeks of legend.
It's legend, or they're referring to like their one-celled organism form or something. I don't know.
I think what we're meant to take
like
away
a bunch
from
of made
it
up
is
nonsense.
We're watching Tilly learn a little bit about life, and in this case, Tilly initially tries to argue the point,
right,
and then realizes, you know what? This is not a point I need to argue, because this is not what we're discussing. This is not the issue at hand. You know,
no one loves my twin sister like I do.
it was a little funny.
That was kind of funny. It was a little corny, but it was also a little adorable. I don't know.
What did you think about the hormonal space rabbit?
There is a hormonal space rabbit.
That's what I thought.
There is a hormonal space rabbit.
Okay, that's kind of silly, because like, there can't actually be such a thing called a space rabbit.
Tilly is a hormonal space rabbit.
Like, why would there be a space
whale? There's a Gormagander. It's like a space whale.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a space rabbit.
But what's it gonna hop around on? The planets?
Well, it could metaphorically hop.
It could hop from planet to planet. The space rabbit.
Maybe that's why it's called the space rabbit.
There is a hormonal space rabbit.
I thought that was a weird thing to say. I don't believe that there's actually such a thing called a space rabbit. And it's weird that Tilly would just make that up. I guess that just shows like how taken off guard she was. But she could have thought, she should have just said a Gormagander flew through or something.
Gormagander?
a space rabbit. Is a space rabbit just a rabbit that lives on spaceships? Maybe that's, but why would they call it a space rabbit and not just a rabbit?
Yeah.
What the hell?
It's a good point you make there, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Because space hair doesn't sound so good.
I'm a big Tilly fan. I've always been a big Tilly fan. I really enjoy how they positioned her as the young, talented, excitable and excited character. Similar in some ways to Tendi. Tendi shares some sort of a similar niche, in terms of characterization and also audience surrogate, because you can kind of see new things from the audience's perspective. And again, here they make her a little bit more relatable and they give her an opportunity to help somebody out and make a friend. And that's all you need to do. And that's, again, why I like this. I like this format of a show. This story wouldn't work in an hour episode, obviously, and it would even be problematic as a B story or something, right? Like, this works in this context, and I think it works very well.
You know, I was looking at Poe's hands, and they kind of reminded me of Saru's hands in the sense that it looked like they're it looks like they had some kind of like makeup glove on. It kind of looked like it was a glove. Obviously, it wasn't their actual fingers, but what I'm saying is, to me, it looked very much like there was some kind of obvious prosthetic on
too glovey.
There. It was a little too glovey. It was too poofy.
Too glovey.
I mean, it looked fine.
Danny glovey.
It looked fine. It looked good. It just looked kind of weird and synthetic. But it was fine, though.
This is not my favorite of the short treks by any stretch. And I've always enjoyed it. But actually, this watch through, I hadn't seen in a while. I enjoyed it more than I had in the past.
I got
more out of it.
I like how she calls back, does the mother call back when she goes... Poe's all scared or whatever, and then Tilly's like, when the people who are supposed to care about you don't listen to you, it's frightening and it's lonely and it makes you feel like you're crazy or like not even there. Like, that was a pretty strong
deal.
Strong moment. Yeah, I was into that.
It's the thesis of this episode.
It brought it back to the initial. Yeah, right. So,
and again, a very relatable point where when the people who are not supposed to let you down. That's fucked up.
Did you do that? Don't do that. That's rude.
But she doesn't wallow in it. She's like, oh, but I don't have to. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry. I can feel bad about that, but I can still do some. I can go a different direction. Yeah. Find this new family on Discovery. Make this new friend who happens to be a queen.
She's on like one of the premier ships of the fleet.
And I like that whole Poe turning out to be a queen thing, because it's very kind of old school sci-fi.
So I guess
her brother
died. I don't know how Tilly knew that her brother died.
And her parents died. And we didn't hear why. I got hints that there was some sort of Game of Thrones style turmoil ever since. Because my understanding is that they...
Tilly looked like she was going to throw up when she found out that she coughed when she found out.
Oh, by the way,
she looked like she was gagging.
Look, coughing for Mary Wiseman, I'm presuming she selected this. Whoever came up with the idea of having Tilly's anxiety indicator be coughing, like, that's great, because that's not a common thing. And the thing is people's anxiety does manifest in all manner of ways, but on TV shows it's always like, oh,
right,
like fainting or something. Her freaking out was just coughing. Like, that's so hilarious to start
nobody
coughing.
Ever has gas on TV.
No, it's true. In the He-Man, they didn't have bathrooms. I remember
in Star Trek they didn't have bathrooms.
It's true. Well, not just coughing, like I said, to me, I got out of it. It was almost like she was dry heaving a little bit.
I shouldn't do that.
There were some inconsistent pronunciations. Let me play these.
Pronunciation.
Okay, let me play this.
Lasso.
Zahian.
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 Wait a second.
I think I know what Dan's gonna do.
Zahian. Zahian. Blood-based circulatory fluid.
Zahia just achieved warp capacity.
Zahia is so beautiful.
Zahia.
Zahia just achieved.
Zahia.
Zahia just achieved.
Zahia.
Zahia just achieved.
Zahia.
Zahia just achieved.
Zahia.
See, one time she's saying Zahia, and the next time first time she says Zahia.
Zahia just achieved.
And then she says Zahia.
Zahia. Yeah,
it's weird.
Tilly says the same incorrect things twice. Yeah. That's been happening. I've been noticing that recently, like with the same characters.
Do you think it's bad acting?
No, it's just weird.
Zahia. Zahia just achieved Zahia.
Yeah, maybe they made a decision later on about what to call something or how to pronounce
it. What did you think I was going to say, Patrick?
Oh, I thought you were going to play like a clip from the Zohan movie.
Oh.
Something about Zohan.
That did not even cross my mind for a second.
It just would be funny at the end to be all like, the don't mess with the Zohan.
Well, that would have been clever. Yeah. I've never actually seen that movie.
No, nor have I.
Mm-hmm.
But Zohan, Zahia.
There was one part where Tilly was like, "I think you have your answer, kid," and I don't know what she had her answer to.
Oh, but that was after Poe mentioned how much she loved her planet and how she would do anything to help her planet.
No one loves my twin sister like I do.
Yeah. She said, "How do you think they're going to handle this thing you built for Zahia? Zahia, do you think they're going to protect her during this? No, no one will protect my planet.
No one loves my twin sister like I do. Yeah,
that, I think so, you have your answer,
yeah, exactly.
Kid.
So you go back. If you care, you have to go back. That was the message.
I don't see...
It's right there, Dan.
How do you think...
Grasp it.
Do you think they're going to protect her? I think you have... But she never asked if I should go back.
No, no. Look, so...
She never asked that question.
Poe has run away.
There was no question.
But Poe has run away. She is a runaway.
Runaway.
Tilly knows the title of the episode. They are both running away. And they both need to realize that running away does not solve the problem. In Poe's case, what Tilly is illustrating to her is that Poe says she loves her planet more than anyone else.
No one loves my twin sister like I do.
Like I do.
And therefore, logically... Tilly is saying, guys. So if you want your planet to be, if you want your twin sister to be good, you got to go back. You can't run away from her because you love her more than anybody else, right? Mm. Boom. And then Tilly also learns she shouldn't run away from the command school or the wall or whatever business.
Oh yeah, did you calculate the precise protein concentration and small particle dispersion of emulsifiers to make a matter synthesizer dispense nothing but spumoni ice cream when you were 9?
Yeah, gross.
I thought that was excessive.
No, you didn't.
I thought that was excessive. That was the joke excessive. Was funny, but it was from a writing perspective, it was
two lines,
it was a little too much.
Yep.
Yeah.
It didn't need to be that long. If you're going to make it that long, you got to go ahead and make it twice as long. You got to make it aggravating.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. You can aggravate your audience. Tarantino you can repeat style. Something, but you got to either go for it all the way or you keep it short.
I was being extraordinary.
That's right.
I know what all that's right. all about.
Okay.
Don't you know?
Okay.
You know.
By the way, Dan that show. Knows about by the way, that show extraordinary. That show extraordinary. That British show.
Extraordinary.
On Netflix or whatever. No, it's on Hulu. Extraordinary about the everyone's got superpowers except for the main character girl. Great show. Go watch it. It's excellent. All right. Let's
teen kid.
Let's move along home to Calypso. I enjoyed those sound effects.
This is one of the more interesting ones.
Calypso's great.
Why is it called Calypso?
I know why it's called Calypso. Would you
Sorry,
like to
Jesse,
know?
I interrupted Jesse, you.
Jesse,
you
do you
no,
know why it's called?
I would like to hear your...
Jesse, do you know?
No, I'm not really sure.
Ah, this is...
I was a little stumped.
It happens to be in my bailiwick. Because Word. I was an English major.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm an
that's
English
right,
major,
though.
So I know all these words and sentences. I know
about mythology.
I knew at least 20 kinds of sentences.
I also know how to use the old internet.
I learned 7 sentences yesterday. Because I majored in English.
Is it because she kept him there or something?
Yeah, yes, you're not far off. So this is another case of Star Trek loving its literary references.
Totally.
In this case, Calypso presumably... refers to the nymph in Homer's The Odyssey, and this nymph rescues Odysseus from a shipwreck, and she keeps him on this island, so she nurses him back to health, and then she likes having him around, so she basically tricks him into sticking around, even though he really misses his wife Penelope, or Penelope if you're me reading the story when I'm 12.
That was always funny.
Penelope, Penelope, whatever your preference. But so eventually the gods go to Calypso and say, you're being really fucking shitty to this dude because he misses his wife and you're tricking him into staying on the island. So they convince her to...
He got tricked by a couple of
people. To let him go. So it's a very similar story. This is basically the story. This is basically the story of Calypso and Odysseus. Who's shipwrecked is trapped. The difference here is that Zora, who takes the role of Calypso in this case, Zora is able to make the decision on her own and does not have to be influenced by the gods or some other external force.
Right.
And doesn't need to be pressured into letting the guy go. She comes to realize on her own it's probably not cool to trap this guy here and keep him in prison just to keep you company.
But this
it's
is like
waffle.
The ship and we only see the ship transform that way later on in
yes.
Discovery.
Yeah.
Way after this short trek has aired.
After.
This is some kind of weird, foreshadowing thing.
So this is supposed to take place in the year 4000 or
this
something.
This guy's got something a case of the Spostas.
Because
Sounds like somebody
Discovery
does.
Was sitting around for 1,000 years.
Yeah, that's what and we're led to believe.
Right, and so did this fall in the level in year 3,000 when Discovery started taking place? Do you think that? Yeah, do you think that they probably won't. But do you think they'll end this season of Discovery
It would be cool if they
ended it with like the crew leaving the ship behind and it was that.
Yeah, but there's a twist. There's a twist.
A twist.
Because I think this is an important thing. We'll discuss the rest of the...
Holy
there's
shit.
A lot to discuss in this little short track. But I think it does make sense to discuss where this may or may not fit into the overall Discovery canon. Because this Discovery is unmodified. So the Discovery that we are now friends and family plan
with... doesn't have the separated...
In the 32nd section. It's been upgraded, right? It's been upgraded with super future tech.
That's right.
So were the Discovery to... end in some fashion on this Calypso story, you'd have to find a way to sort of revert it back to its original form.
This is an alternate.
Yeah. So this could be an alternate. It could just be that this is something that happened somewhere along the lines. I don't know. I'm very curious. I think ever since this aired, people have been wondering, what does this mean? Is this just a one-off frivolous? Well, not frivolous. That's not the right term. Is this just like a fun little jaunt? Using the sets and stuff like that. Like, or is this something that like you said, Jesse, is this where it's going to end up? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out in the fifth and final season of Discovery.
I bet we don't.
Yeah. I'm guessing we don't.
So he got in an escape pod to run away from the Vedraish. Do you think the Vedraish were like actually Earthlings and he actually fought Earth people? Because he was talking about how they had those old videos.
It's a bastardization of the Federation.
Right.
I think that's pretty well accepted that Vedraish is like 1,000 years of like bastardization.
They're just watching Betty Boop.
Evolution of the term Federation.
So Kraft or Quarrel or whatever his name.
Kraft is his name.
Kraft.
Do you know why they call him Kraft?
But he also called himself...
Because he likes Kraft macaroni and cheese.
And arts and crafts?
Well, no, but it was Kraft with a C. Yeah.
No, but what about...
Quarrel. Carl.
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 Carl. Quarrel.
Quarrel. Maybe he's Professor Quarrel in Harry
Potter. Carl. Carl. Carl.
Squirrel.
Carl. Carl. Quarrel.
Where do you come up with this stuff, Dan?
A duck.
A duck.
Carl.
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 Quarrel.
Quarrel.
Carl.
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 Quarrel.
Carl.
Carl.
Quarrel.
I was thinking that, I don't know. I don't know where he came up with that quarrel.
A duck.
Are we supposed to understand
holograms?
Like, what are we supposed to understand something
hologram.
About the quarrel?
I don't know what that quarrel thing was about. And then she all like called him a liar. He says his name's quarrel, and she was all
do
like,
you think that was just his alias?
That's like probably.
Okay, so
might
what
be an alias.
So this guy Kraft, he probably was
she's been around long enough to know when people are lying.
He was in the battle against the Earthlings or the Federation or whatever, and he probably fought the Discovery. No, the Discovery had left 1,000 years prior.
So but he's been sitting there for a while.
Yeah, she's been sitting there for a while, but like he's been at war with that side. So he's on the enemy ship.
But he was floating around for a while. But, I don't think Discovery's probably been out of the scene for a bit.
But like but when it comes down to it, though, it is a Federation ship, and so it's
sure.
And it's a Federation ship that appears for some reason to identify as a female.
And so, because it's a Federation ship,
interesting.
It's like a Romeo and Juliet story in a way, because he's like on the making friends with
word.
The enemy.
Yeah, I see.
That's where I'm going with
right
that.
Right on, though.
Well observed, sir.
I like the when they were dancing. I liked how surreal. It looked like
it's a beautiful little story,
and I like the idea of watching movies, making the movies all like 3D holograms.
Yeah,
you know?
It was great.
Holograms,
it was really, really nicely done. And the thing about
and then they did that later on in Discovery where they were watching old vintage shit.
Although I didn't like that thing they were watching; it was freaking me out.
Oh, you mean the actual Charlie Chaplin thing. The funny face?
Yeah, the whole funny face thing.
He's not funny face. Was,
yeah, right.
She is.
This is such a charming little story, and part of the charm is that there's no universes saved, you know, no political machinations are navigated. There's not even really any sort of a moral tale beyond Zora has a little bit of a moral tale about whether or not to let the guy go, but she very swiftly decides that she has to because she cares.
It's a fancy new suit.
All this is two people, an artificial intelligence, and a gentleman.
Taco Tuesday.
And they're in this giant universe.
Tuesday.
And we just see there's a brief interaction. A brief interaction between them and all this magic comes out of that little interaction, and then they go their separate ways. We don't know what happens afterwards. We don't really know what happened before. We just see this little bit, and it's beautiful. It's just fun and interesting and charming.
It's
and
all mysterious.
The thing is, you know, there's a few times we'll talk about an episode, and we'll complain. Maybe not complain, but we'll note. We'll be like, you know, they hinted at some interesting ideas, but they didn't really go into them. This does that, but because, again, it's just so short, because of that short format, you're okay with, in my perspective anyway, is that you're like, oh, I'm thinking about all these things now, and it's okay that they didn't get to cover them, because that's not what we got to see. Mm-hmm. Now we can think on our own, because one of the things I was thinking about is just this idea, this introduction of the concept of Zora slowly building her consciousness over the course of eons.
Yeah. It's a waffle.
And thinking about things like
you pour syrup on it.
Like you have a sentient or a sapient AI, and you're like, how do you have a frame of reference to compare with that thing, right? You know.
Well, wasn't Discovery starting to get like some kind of sentient?
Yeah, but that computer? Jesse mentioned that, but that was later. So we see the beginnings of Zora later, but Zora is nowhere near as like advanced as she is depicted in this episode. Yeah. But you start thinking She's of all dancing. This AI stuff, like AI being lonely versus not being lonely, perceptions of time, perceptions of following so orders. You know,
your orders were given by a captain who's been dead for 1,000 years.
Yeah, like that implicit in that line is what does it mean?
Almost 1,000 years.
What does it mean? What priority does the AI put towards loyalty to the programming that says you follow the orders versus understanding full well that the people and even the institutions that provided those orders are no longer in existence? So are those orders now inoperative, right? And they don't go into this, but it's in there. And I think that's what makes this such a meaty story.
It's in there.
And then, of course, you have the guy who's missing his family. And you can see they have it's so brilliant how he has the reaction of somebody who's afraid to start an affair. They think that he feels guilty that he has an emotional connection to
this robot.
I don't know.
I think brilliant is a strong word.
I mean, it is. I mean, feel free to disagree.
Brilliant.
You don't think that's an interesting thing?
I think it's interesting. I'd say brilliant is a really strong word.
All right. Well, maybe I'm using it in the British sense.
It's a brilliant word.
Maybe
in
the British sense.
Okay,
I think it's keen.
Ah, keen. Okay.
I think it's a keen thing.
It's fit?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's nothing.
Zora is fit.
Okay.
Is it on the red?
I'm going to toss you in the boot of my car and drive you around the M5. If you know what I mean.
Nah.
I couldn't find the highway, so I had to take a little back road called the M5.
I think I was on that one.
That's a Faulty Towers joke.
On the M4.
Okay. But again, like I said, yeah. Okay. Maybe none of these ideas are particularly unique. But it's just so well put together. I just found it's ever since the first time I watched it, it's just a thoroughly charming little story. And again, partly because the consequence is there's no more consequence than it is to these two people. There's nothing else that matters in this universe. That's all we see. That's all we experience. Except we do get some really beautiful shots of the Discovery again.
Well, they did the zoomy, unnecessary upside down zoomy camera thing when they first got to him in his ship. Like I like when they
it was slower
when this generation of Star Trek. I like when they do the super zoomy shots when they're like outside in space and they zoom into the ship, or when they're in the ship and they zoom out to space. I think those are fun. But when they do these sort of random stuff where it's like it's upside down inside and it's right side up for some reason, you know, it doesn't represent
like, you're in
anything.
Space. It's like you're not telling me that's not telling me you're in space.
Right.
One of the shots that you reference, I think, is one of the more brilliant shots I've actually seen in Star Trek, which is the starting from outside the bridge window, and you see Kraft start his dance routine towards the end.
It seemed like that actor could actually. It seemed like that actor could actually dance because he was he looked graceful.
He had a dancer's body, and it was.
Oh yeah,
I think where I could tell where I could tell was when he was trying to fake learning how to dance. Because you know how, like, when actors have to fake bad acting or singers fake bad singing?
That's what I'm saying.
He didn't pull off the fake, but he was like, you know, you look really good.
No, that's what I was saying, is that when he was practicing dancing, he had, like, this flow about him that, like, looked a little bit... Too graceful.
It stood out because he's in the story, he's supposed to be sort of like working really hard to learn this dance move, and it's like, dude, you know how to do it. You're good at this.
When he got on the ship, she removed. So she said she didn't remove one of his scars, but she removed some other scars or something.
Well, he was injured. It's hard to tell, but when you zoom in before, but he's been there
for like a month.
Like a stasis field or some shit. He's like got like gross injuries a little bit. I guess she cleaned them up, just like Calypso did in the Odyssey.
Oh dear, you thought I was alive?
There was one part where she let him down some hallway to the kitchen. She did that trick where you only light one room at a time, and everything else, and leads you. I'd be scared of monsters if I was in that ship by myself.
Of course,
it was all dark around me.
There's bound to be monsters.
Yeah, see, you know, there's Star Trek space monsters.
I mean, the same story could go slightly that you can
like
there,
you know,
space hair, space bunnies.
Yeah,
there is a hormonal space rabbit.
rabbit. You write the story a little bit different, and it's a horror story.
Darn tootin'.
Where Zora actually does. Kidnap
I was
and forever in snare craft.
I was also confused by this exchange. Zora goes, she's giving him food, and she's like, I'm sorry, it's so synthesized, chef's away, and it's ages since we had a resupply of foodstuffs. So like, what is so synthesized? They haven't needed a chef since Enterprise day.
I heard it differently though. I heard her, and I could be wrong. As evidence, you definitely caught more of the food replicator, food dispenser stuff than I did. So I will defer to your opinion. What I heard was, sorry, it's all synthesized. So in other words, sorry, there is no non-synthesized food available.
No, he goes, where are you leading me? And then she's giving him food and says, I'm sorry, it's so synthesized.
According to Checotea.net?
This is a different site, but it was also in the transcripts.
What
as
site
well.
Is this?
This is, they don't have like these newer ones on the Chakotea. This is just like transcripts.foreverdreaming.org.
The best part is you're clearly not making that up.
No, I'm not.
You're on a crazy website. You're on a crazy part of the internet.
So first of all, there's not different levels of synthesis. Plus, they haven't had a chef since like Enterprise Day. So isn't it always, even if it was Patrick, even if she did say, I'm sorry, it's all synthesized, they've had all synthesized food since forever.
No.
They don't.
Look, on Enterprise, they make it more apparent.
Well, Enterprise, because it's older, they don't have food synthesizers.
Because.
Get to the back of the ball.
No, I'm going to continue my point.
Hello, penguin. Shampoo is better.
Shampoo is better.
Get to the back of the ball.
Conditioner is better.
He sounded like an angry German there.
Conditioner is better. You have to use the conditioner, don't you know?
He's going to be a soccer player.
Shampoo is not better, Dan.
Okay, now where were we? We should finish this up.
Probably about time for another break.
We're getting close to another break. I wanted to say the multi-craft. Lilu Dallas multi-craft effect was really, I really enjoyed that effect to show time passing and craft's boredom as he's going through his business. Oh, and I now remember what I was meant to say earlier, which is on TOS... First of all, on TOS, it was never clear that there were food replicators. It was more like dispensers. And they do the same thing on Discovery, where it's not that they're not saying it's a replicator, but it's kind of presented a little bit differently. But the other thing is there was always the indication that they did have normal food on board as well. Because that was the nice treat to have. It's just that, like,
yeah,
you
but
know,
this
the
takes
bulk
place
of your food
this
is...
This place takes place in the year 4000, though.
First of all, we don't know the year.
At least 3,000 because they said they were there for 1,000 years.
But it's 3,000.
Almost 1,000 years.
3,000 with a 22nd century ship because the ship technology
has
not changed.
But craft is. If she gave him real food, she'd have to say, I'm sorry, it's all real food. I'm sure Mr. lives in the year 3,000 or 4,000. You're used to synthesized food. Craft would be used to synthesized food.
Well, that's an assumption. It's a fair assumption, but it's still an assumption. And anyway, it's beside the point. She was being polite. She was flirting with a guy.
I wouldn't Like, if
she's
I were
making conversation,
I wouldn't be able to sleep in that transporter room with the hammock like he did. First of all, I'd find some crew quarters. Second of all, like, I'd be all out in the open like that. Yeah. I'd like to be in somewhere a little snugglier.
Yeah, a little bit more cozy.
You think he could do something better than a hammock? Yeah. I don't know. And there was 542,000 media files.
542,000 media files.
He watched one
files.
Of them 811 times.
811 times.
Because he couldn't figure out how to turn
were accessed.
Off.
What is Betty Boop?
Betty Boop. That was another
what
fun
What is
bit.
Betty Boop? Betty Boop.
Betty Boop.
What is Betty,
Betty
Boop?
Boop? Betty Boop.
Betty Boop. Betty Boop. What is Betty Boop? Betty Boop. Betty Boop.
Whoa.
Okay. What is Betty
so
Boop?
So while Dan
Betty
sorts
Boop,
out the Betty Boop,
Boop
business,
what is
Betty Boop?
Betty Boop.
We will
Betty
take
Boop, Betty Boop.
Another break.
What is Betty Boop?
And when
Betty
we get
Boop,
back
Betty Boop.
From
what
the break,
what is Betty Boop? Betty Boop.
We will discuss Saru and the brightest star. Be right back. Do one of you want to bring us back?
And we're back.
Okay. And we're back.
There we go. Both of you brought us back. That's perfect.
Check it out.
Check it out.
I did this before. I'll just do it a couple times.
Check it out.
Check
it out.
Check this out.
Check it out.
What is Betty Boop? Betty Boop. Betty Boop. What is Betty Boop? Betty Boop. Betty Boop.
What'd you say?
What is Betty Boop?
Did you say that you'd done that a few times?
What is Betty Boop? Betty Boop. Betty Boop.
I just thought that was so good. I had to do it.
No,
it was
good. Calypso's great. It's a good one. And if people haven't seen it, I mean, first of all, I don't know
you
why
you're
listening to the podcast, but yeah, you should watch it. It's a charming little thing, and it doesn't take too much time out of your day.
So the next one we're doing is The Brightest Star.
It's The Brightest Star.
And I like how, I like the
set. Dan's all in on this one.
I like how I like the set, and I like the ambiance of how it's outside, and it feels like, you know, and it's got that sci-fi movie vibe, because it's like sci-fi, obviously, but it's not futuristic. It's that kind of sci-fi where it's like old school, you know?
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel
they're
like...
They're harvesting kelp.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel
they're
like...
They're kelpians.
But even
that's what they do.
And it doesn't feel like fantasy. It still feels like sci-fi. That's probably because there's that big obelisk thing in the middle. But like still, it's a sci-fi...
Although that could actually fit into a fantasy.
Yeah,
show.
Right.
You like twist the story a little bit and put some Fraggle Rock characters
Fraggle
in
Rock,
it, and that's like some sort of
scary...
Oh, no,
scary that's some Dark Crystal.
It's like some Dark Crystal shit.
But, yeah, so I like that. I like watching sci-fi that feels like some kind of old school shit, and it was pretty neat. And I like that they are all outside, and I liked how the planet, the dirt was really, really red. And then she was carrying that flower that was super red at that one point. That was weird. Wasn't that cool? I thought that was neat.
What? Okay.
You are extraordinary.
One thing people at home need to know is that Dan's really into red dirt.
I'm into red dirt.
It's the only reason he lives here in Virginia. In Virginia is known for its red clay. In the United States, Virginia has very, very red clay. And so Dan loves red dirt. If you are one of our listeners living somewhere around the world, if you live in a place that has red clay, please write us in. Write in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com with the subject line, Dan's Paradise.
I think parts of Georgia.
Yeah. There's other U.S. states as well. But Virginia's got really, we got the good red clay.
My place is no longer here.
But Dan might be interested in moving. So you got to let us know about the red clay. Send us pictures of the red dirt. Any red dirt. If you live on Mars, they got you got tons of red dirt over there on Mars. Anyway, what were you saying, Dan? You were saying something?
My place is no longer here.
Oh, yeah. You liked this because there was red dirt.
Wouldn't it be awesome if you really believed there was consciousness after death? This harvesting situation wouldn't be so much of a bummer if you actually believed you were going to keep living. I want to go over these harvesting rules, because I thought they got harvested when they reached the Vaharai. Is that what it's
called?
Yes,
but it's not a specific age. It's always past a certain age, but it's a little bit variable when it actually happens.
And then how do they have old people? Because they have old priests. Dudes.
Yeah. So do you think that
the Ba'ul keep the priests alive because the priests are promoting the message?
There's a manipulation here.
So the priests probably know. Some of them are probably corrupt and know, like, if I keep pushing this, they won't kill me.
I don't know, but that's an interesting idea. It's something that they haven't really investigated, and I guess they don't need to investigate any longer because of events that took place in Discovery that rendered some of these questions moot.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do think is cool is that
thank you, Lieutenant Giorgio.
Here again, we get some much needed, very helpful background on a character's motivation, specifically Saru. We learn
Saruma.
We learn.
I did not understand.
We learn all sorts of things. But we learn what Saru's motivation was and what the circumstances were and what he gave up, what he sacrificed in order to leave his planet and ultimately join Starfleet. Although that may be, I don't know if he conceived of that initially, but obviously he wanted to go and have adventures, right? So that's all really cool.
He was the only one that looked like to look to the sky. Even his sister was like, look to the ground sometimes, you know?
Which they were is also good advice.
Yeah, it's true.
You don't want to trip on a root.
I didn't understand how...
You ever tripped on a root or on a loose rock? You got to look down sometimes. Otherwise, you could trip on a loose rock.
The watchful eye rules the skies. You know this?
The watchful eye rules the sky. I like how quickly he says, you know this. It was a good line reading. He's like,
the watchful eye rules the skies, you know this?
The watchful eye rules the skies, you know this? You know this? No pause, you know this? Rolls right into it.
Are you prepared for that, Mr. Saru?
Looking at the skies.
It fell off the bow ship, as pieces sometimes do.
That was a little extra. It fell off the bow ship? Not really offensive exposition yet.
As pieces often do.
Okay, that's now that's exposition.
Yeah.
Now that's treating the audience a little bit dumb.
I mean,
I really like this episode, but there's a few of those.
So I wasn't clear on where it wasn't falling off that obelisk looking thing, because that looked pretty smooth. It didn't look like it had any doodads or gidgets that would fall off. So that leads me to believe, what, did it fall from space, from the sky?
I don't know.
Because they never showed any spaceship in the sky. All they showed was that pillar thing. Right? So, where did that fucking thing fall off of?
Where would I stay?
Where would that thing have possibly come off of?
Where would I stay?
So, they had this weird screen thing, that thing that fell off. Yeah, it was this weird screen thing that was divided into six screen parts for some reason. Yes.
Slash hello.
Okay, I'm guessing that this thing wasn't initially meant to communicate because...
Slash help.
I'm guessing that this thing wasn't initially meant to communicate because, that's a really limited way to communicate with someone by only having, six little areas you can write in.
He hacked it.
But then why was it... Yeah, slash hello was kind of goofy. I wasn't sure what the deal with the slash was. He doesn't know what... And then when it said slash today, how is he supposed to know what today is? He seemed to know what today meant because he went that day. So he saw today and he was able to read it as today.
Yeah.
So, how did he know that it said today? Yeah. How did he know to go out there that night?
Yeah. I think they didn't think that one through entirely.
You know? Yeah.
Mixing the conventions of the storyline where he has to translate a message versus the meta storyline as we're watching Star Trek. And the convention is that we can simply read what they're reading. I agree. Confusing.
Now, I did not understand that this is not how I was raised.
Also easily ignored.
Well, no. And it was... Well, you couldn't even use the... Okay. You think it was actually written in Kelpian? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is, from my perspective, I didn't worry about it in the context of the story of... We just need to know that he got a message, figured it out.
I had a hard time just suspending my disbelief for that one.
I can understand that. There's a more elegant way they could have.
The universal translator stuff, that's fine, because that would just be tedious if we had to deal with the actual. Well, I whistled. Okay, here's an inconsistency though.
Inconsistency.
Can you spot the inconsistency? First, this is Giorgio's universal translator.
It's a pleasure to finally put a face to the name, Mr. Saru. An entirely new face at that. Say Yura
Abram Saru. Okay, now here's Saru's.
Kijayus, Edunak,
Kaluya. I was not certain you would come.
Okay. Can you spot the inconsistency?
I did not.
Jesse?
I was thinking in my mind about how Mark Orkrend, who developed the Klingon language and he developed the Vulcan language, he helped develop the Kelpian language.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, yeah.
I didn't know that. Jesse, I asked if you could spot the inconsistency and you said yes.
Yes. Okay. He has asked you a direct question, Jesse. He's thinking. Jesse's thinking. Just doing a little.
Do you want me to play it one more time?
Play it one more time.
It's a pleasure to finally put a face to the name, Mr. Saru. An entirely new face at that.
Okay, next one.
Kijeus Eduanak.
I was not certain you would come.
I don't hear it.
I'm not really sure what you're getting at.
There's an inconsistency.
Okay, I think
you want me to? You give up?
I think you're gonna have to lay it on the line for
the
us.
The one with Giorgio, it translates like almost immediately, but with Saru's, it takes like a few seconds before it's a vast. There's a vast difference between when it translates.
Did you say there's a vast difference?
No. There's a vast difference between.
You heard it right.
There's a vast difference between. Between how long it takes to translate from English to Kelpie and then it does Kelpie into English. See, this is immediate.
It's a pleasure to finally put a face to the name, Mr. Saru.
See,
an entirely new face at that.
That was immediate. Now, this takes a few seconds. Check it out.
Kijeus Eduanak.
I was not certain you would come.
Yeah.
That was the game we played today.
Yeah. That's a good game. The other thing about this episode is that it clarifies some questions people had about Kelpians, including even Doug Jones. So on Memory Alpha, they quote an interview with Doug Jones where he mentions that his assumption from the first season was that his people were sort of herded like cattle, and that when this story came around and he realized it was a much more ritualistic situation, he said suddenly that made way more sense because the Kelpians are clearly intelligent, emotional beings with a cultural life and all that. And you're like, why would they be willing to be put into pens? And this makes much more sense where it's using a person's culture, religion, spirituality, crafting a scenario in which they are compelled to sacrifice themselves. That's a different and way more interesting story, especially when we're following the character who breaks out of that based sheerly on his curiosity. He's just so curious, and
he's so curious.
Well, he implicitly sees through the flaws in his own culture when just even asking a question is his dad yells at him, gets mad at him when he's like, why can't we be like the Bao? And his dad's like, what the fuck, man? That's crazy. You can't say that shit.
About the harvesting and the Vaha Rai, back to that one again. It says that in Memory Alpha, it says Kelpians who underwent Vahari would voluntarily submit to harvesting. So that means when you undergo Vahari, you submit to the harvesting.
Yeah.
So that means that maybe, I'm guessing they go at they get the Vaharai at different times, and they're
yes,
like,
yeah, that was the implication, and I think it was
except,
even stated.
Some people get a pass though. Some people like, because you wouldn't have old people otherwise, because you're basically getting all the Kelpians when they hit puberty. But then there's
I think they specifically differentiate it from puberty in the sense that it does happen at various times, and only a very few people become old enough to be priests or whatever, but they still get got in the end. I believe on Discovery, his father gets taken at one point.
So, okay, so you're saying it can happen anywhere from age 5 to age 30 or something like it can
whatever.
Just happen.
They're not like, you know, the Okampans where they like only live 9 years or whatever.
Well, no, I know. It's just when I think of like an event things go through, like when Vulcans go through
their Ponfar.
Ponfar. Like, doesn't that usually happen around like very predictable times?
Yeah, but it doesn't have to. And I think that's one of the interesting things about the Kelpians that we yeah, it is a process they go through, and there's some time frame, but there's a very
when he was talking to Giorgio, did you notice his threat ganglia was all up when he was talking to Giorgio?
Because he was freaked out.
Well, I mean, I thought that was a good, nice touch.
I like the bird bug. Did you see the bird bug?
Bird bug. Yeah, I saw the bird bug.
Bird bug was pretty cool.
Bird bug was cool.
And
bird
of course, the whole Vaharai or whatever. Whatever the term is, it evokes carousel, the concept of carousel from Logan's Run. And Logan's Run is a great movie. It's not a great movie, but it's a great movie. But in that movie, the people, like, I think when they hit 25 or whatever, they have a little crystal in their hand, and when it blinks, they're supposed to go to carousel and they'll be elevated to the next level where everything is super awesome.
Are you prepared for that, Mr. Saru?
But then it turns out It turns out they're just being ground into like paste and fed to people. This is sort of a similar thing where we know these people are being hoodwinked.
Hoodwinked.
They're being hoodwinked into being at.
Bamboozled.
Yes, precisely. Anyway, any other things about The Brightest Star?
Nah.
That's the bird bug. More hotter.
Here's some old man background chatter.
You're a noisy fella.
Or old Kelpian background chatter.
That bowl ain't right. That bowl ain't right. All right. Let's finish this up. We only have so much time.
I have the unsettling urge to run back to safety.
We only have so much. His sister was great, by the way.
Mm-hmm. She handed him that knife almost like she knew he was going to get into some shit. Even though it was for flowers.
She seemed to think, they were saying goodbye. The girl who made the stars. This is the shortest one.
You want to hear the story of the girl who made the stars.
That voice is Kendrick Green, who played Mike Burnham, Michael Burnham's father. And Kyrie...
Mike Burnham.
McAlpin plays young Michael Burnham.
I love you, Daddy.
The girl who made the stars.
I love you, too.
Okay, so this story, the story that they tell in this short trek, which the setup is that Michael is on a space station with her dad, presumably, and her mom, and
yeah, I like
she
that.
Feels very lonely.
That opening shot was pretty cool. How it was showing some like the space station, and it jumped into her room.
Yes,
which had the space station.
It was really, really well done, and she's scared because she feels lonely out here in space, and so
I hate being scared.
And her father tells her this tale, this myth, as sort of a nighttime story to help her, you know, feel better. And I really like that. I always like that idea of like, you know, the liminal space between the waking and sleeping world, and you tell these mythological tales. That's like
it was so scary. It was so scary.
It's like sitting next to a campfire, but like I think it's even more impactful those nighttime stories because it's that space between consciousness and unconsciousness.
Word, totally.
And you get all this crazy stuff going on. The fears
come
out.
Too little to know what that means.
Well, you'll find out when you get to college and you try DMT.
No. But that's just rude.
This story about the girl who made the stars is referenced by Michael Burnham, by teenage Michael Burnham, in the season 2 premiere when she's talking to little Spock because she's trying to make a connection with him or whatever. But she tells like the more traditional version of the story because I guess it's originally from a Zambambantha Bushman, for use the archaic term, tribe in southern Africa. And in that original story, the girl sticks her hand in wood ash and then throws it up in the sky. and that makes the Milky Way. And that's the version that young Michael tells to even younger Spock in the season 2 premiere. This story is different. It's told differently in this episode, in this short trek, but I think it's a good variation because they added a bunch of stuff.
The Night Beast.
Yes, the Night Beast.
She was holding an Ephraim doll.
Yes, that's right. Good catch. Yeah. This is a little Easter egg from the Ephraim and Dot short trek. The other short trek that came out in the same season.
A thousand centuries ago. So like the elder there, he was being like kind of a jerk face because he was like their land was sucking and he was like, oh, it's too scary to go out and get more land. Like they could have at least sent like a scout out or something because if their land is going bad and people are starving,
they could have relocated,
you think somebody, at least one person could be sent out to scout. But
I mean, that doesn't work in a mythological tale. It has to to fit very specific.
And I gotta say, I don't really understand this whole idea that they used to not have stars and then she made stars. I know it's supposed to be some kind of like metaphor for like discovery, ignorance, discovery.
Ask and answer, buddy.
But it's not like you can gift somebody stars. The stars are already up there. So that means that when they gifted the people the stars, they created billions of like planets and stars and life, and they just created this whole universe of life just for this one planet to be able to see.
Let's go over a couple things here, Dan. Like this is.
But that's just rude.
Yeah. Okay. So, firstly, and I think you understand all these things. I suspect you understand all these things. But
the being said,
you're giving me the opportunity to sort of elucidate them, right? First of all, this myth is specifically, it's a creation myth. It's an explanatory myth. We needn't go even one step further and say that it's just a story.
Are you kidding me?
But it is specifically a creation myth. It is an explanatory text that is developed to explain something that was presumed to have happened in the past. People don't know how it actually happened, so they come up with that.
This is what I'm trying to say.
Secondly, the naked human eye, you can only see like 1,500 stars or something like that. Anyway, you can't see a lot of stars.
Maybe they just gave him good vision.
And they don't know that the stars are.
Maybe
they don't know that they're balls of incandescent plasma.
Maybe
roiling away.
No, maybe the story
with other
is
planets around.
Maybe the story is not.
They don't know that.
Maybe the story is not that they gifted them the stars. It's that they were gifted with good, better vision, so they could see the stars when they couldn't before.
All right.
Maybe that was it.
Maybe, I will concede to you. That is an alternative version of this,
exactly,
of this traditional mythological folktale.
Am I right?
From an actual group of people. Although, yes, this version of it that involves the alien creature is a little bit different. Now, since you seem to have some issue with the logic the logic you were attempting to manhandle onto a mythological tale, do you prefer then the version of the story told here where she's running from a night beast darkness snake and then finds a squid alien?
The night.
A squid vagina alien.
I thought it was more of a squid.
The octo vagina squid squirts things into the sky to make lights. Do you think that has more logical underpinnings? And this is not a gotcha question. I'm sincerely asking because it seems to be that you're not into the ash gets thrown into the sky and makes stars. But what about this? What about alien squishy monster squirts things into the sky and makes stars?
Well, the alien monster was kind of a weird addition just because, like, why was there an alien? Just because it's Star Trek?
I think it was supposed to, yes. First of all, yes, because of Star Trek, but specifically the added lesson was that initially she's afraid of the dark, right? But to overcome
it was so scary. It was so scary.
To overcome her fear of the dark, she had to overcome what the true motivation for being scared of the dark is, which is fear of the unknown.
Exactly.
Yes. And the fear of the unknown in Star Trek is very well represented by presenting of clearly very alien, in the literal sense of the term, an alien being. And that her reaction was curiosity and kindness as opposed to fear and violence, right?
This is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, that's the lesson, right? That's
I know.
And and that's a great lesson, right? It's great. It's so sweet. It's nice. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what the addition of the alien is, to create that scenario. Because otherwise, what's the story? She turns around and yells at the snake and is like, you're not scary.
The night beast.
Or she throws the ash up in the air. You would have been pissed off at that because you're already pissed off at...
I'm not pissed off.
I don't know.
I'm not going to write a letter or anything.
I don't know. You see... You could have ChatGPT write the letter for you.
No. No.
Yes. Anything else? I did. The only other thing I had in my notes here was something about don't anger Dan's night beast. I don't know exactly.
Whoa.
I don't know exactly what I was referring to.
So, yeah, I don't know what that was. That's an interesting.
Anger Dan's night beast. So, I'm sure I had something specific in mind.
So this was the end stage of hunter-gatherers. They were becoming agriculturalists, right? Isn't that the deal?
Yeah, this is where they were combining. So the thing to remember, of course, about Michael Burnham is that she grows up to be a xenoanthropologist, right? And so they're applying some slightly misleading, slightly old-fashioned anthropological concepts here. But again, because it's they're combining the science of Star Trek and the Federation, and her parents are Federation scientists, with a mythological tale. And I think that's where there's a little bit incongruity there, because, it's kind of like you said, like, why wouldn't they figure out that they have to go to the a few days hike? Like, you know, why does it take this story? Well, it takes the story because that's the point of the story.
When she came back home, the elder was waiting to scold her. The elder.
All right.
Aluminum.
The spaceship.
Aluminum.
The spaceship.
Aluminum.
The spaceship looked very Close Encounters-y, which I thought was that was fun.
At the end, when she was like, that was pretty awesome when she turned into the queen, and she all had like, she was like a bow and arrow queen, like ass kicker queen, and she's all jumping at the snake, and the snakes all come, and that shot at the end, I thought that was pretty cool.
And the
closed captioning, it said ululating.
Ululating.
Yeah, it was just interesting. I've never seen that used in a closed caption.
Here's the thing.
Right, that Xena noise.
Do you think it was too stereotypical or something? Or not stereotypical is the wrong word, but did you have a problem that it was?
I thought it was superfluous,
mm-hmm.
and I thought it was disconnected from the rest of the story, because the story concluded with her already getting rid of the darkness, so she doesn't need to be fighting the night beast snake anymore, right?
Well, still, it's still there.
I mean, why? The stars are out. Should starve and die. Listen, the night beast should be fucking gone.
You can't kill off someone that easily.
And the thing is that I like the idea that like she went on to become an explorer and a queen. I think that's wonderful. But then like that last shot, badass shot, amazing shot, cinematic shot. But why is she fighting the night? She didn't need to be fighting the snake. It's done. That's she won all that stuff already. It's like, what's going on?
What a buzzkill.
Well, I'm just saying. That's just rude. I think they had that image in their mind and they're like, fuck, that's awesome. Let's just do it. Let's just fast forward to that and we'll have that.
The being said.
This little thing I'm trying to do is not working. I'm trying to end like people's sentences with
the being said.
Because because
we're beings.
You that was must what was being show said. Them the being said.
You know, it's like a book. It says, hebba debba doo, the dude said. So I was trying to apply that to things you guys were saying. So every time like you guys said something.
Things
I would,
that were being said.
Yeah, I'd respond with the being said. But it just doesn't, it's not working. It's not working.
Yeah.
It's not working.
All right. Well, then it's
it was the light inside that guided her. I don't think I need the nightlight anymore. Dude!
Those minor criticisms aside,
I love you, Daddy.
I really like this episode. And again, it's another example of the experimentation that you can do in this format that it would be cool to see them do a little bit more on. And do like what Pixar does when Pixar has their little shorts. It's a great way to test out the capabilities of young directors, you know, people early in their career, other creatives, writers, et cetera, just give them a little bit of money, let them reuse existing sets that are going on, and just go do some Star Trek.
Or make a cartoon.
Yeah. All right, anything else? Anything else about this?
How can I tell everyone that they don't have to be afraid?
Or
she does a little pause there.
Yeah. But how can I tell everyone that they don't have to be afraid?
That's an interesting rhythm.
Yeah, it was good.
I mean, I just thought it was cool.
Yeah, you don't have to be shy about it.
I'm not shy about it.
You're just a podcast host.
No, I'm not shy about it. I was just saying you don't have to this is that word not confirm, not reinforce.
Uvulate?
You don't need to validate me, I guess.
Validate? Yeah.
You don't need to validate me. I was just saying I like
validating
just,
your parking.
I was just saying
Can I finish, please?
I was just making a side comment. Uh-huh. I don't need validation from any of you guys.
Oh.
Cool. Yeah, that's good.
Curious.
Excellent. But I assume what you're also saying there is that you've concluded any further remarks about any of these short treks. All right. Well, while Dan thinks about that, I'll go ahead.
What are we going to do? You must show them
The being said.
A bee. Star Trek. Okay, yes. That's enough for this week.
With Michael Burnham's dad was named Mike.
With the short treks.
Isn't that hilarious?
And next week, as we mentioned, we will be starting our coverage of Star Trek Discovery Season 5, the fifth and final season, the final 10 episodes, two of which they're playing together. Which is great, I guess, as a Star Trek fan. It's a little aggravating as a Star Trek podcast because it's just it's like,
wow. And everyone else will agree with
it's a lot of stuff. I
they're not thinking of the podcasters when they do this.
Two episodes.
Not jokingly.
We're gonna try to cover both those episodes in next week's episode. Next week, where we'll cover both whatever they show us, whatever they deign to show us on Paramount Plus. Or whatever you might access Star Trek.
Whatever they force us to eat.
In your country. That's what we'll talk about next week. Dan's algorithm will take a break for a little bit. I'm super excited. I'm looking forward. I'm sad to see Discovery ending, but I'm very excited to see the final season. So now we get to do that.
It's going
to
be awesome.
Next week. Okay. In the meantime,
that's another one. That's another tick I have is when you say "in the meantime," I go "in the meantime."
In the meantime.
Da 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 da. In the meantime.
Patreon.com/itsgotstartrek.
In the meantime,
you got a screw loose, Dan.
Last week we talked to ChatGPT. That was pretty cool.
Pay us on Patreon. In the
www.itsgotstartrek.com.
You can do with your clothes on. In the
feedback
meantime,
feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. At It's Got Star Trek. Her name is Kungan. All the social medias, YouTube,
Kungan Earth,
Facebook.
Kung on Earth.
Kunk on Earth.
Kung on Earth. So you guys were saying that one time.
No, it isn't.
Aluminum.
I'm going to say, fuck you, Dan.
Kung on Earth.
I think I said all the bits and pieces. If you want to send in a voicemail, itsgotstartrek.com/record. Okay.
No.
We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Have a glorious day.
There was a hormonal space rabbit. He escaped from the lab and then he got loose in here. He's got mood swings.